welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 214. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this interconnected edition of the podcast, we have Peter 12 Screens Wellington.
Hello.
And John, the man with the LAN, Jordan.
When you say LAN now, it sounds like it's like a 1995 kind of...
It kind of does, doesn't it?
It's yeah.
Isn't it?
It's all routers and hubs and things. No one deals with LAN connections anymore.
It's when I think LAN, whenever I see like LAN on a game, I think Quake.
I think
abusing the school IT room at lunchtime when you just cook it all up and everybody plays. Yeah,
you install the Unreal Tournament demo.
Oh, yes.
And then you play that for
you have to do it every day and wipe it at the end of each session.
Yep.
Oh yeah, them's were the days. How's everybody doing? I imagine if you're anything like me, a wee bit tired today because we were up late last night.
Tired? Why tired? What was happening last night? What?
Something. It didn't have much to do with mobile games, so I don't know. I didn't really pay attention. I heard something about a new something or other with a 4 in it, but, you know, could be anything, really.
It was funny. When the first time he just said PlayStation 4, everyone was like, or Twitter was like, he said PlayStation 4. I was like, yeah, what do you think he was going to say? They're flown everyone to New York and they're just going to, like, not say PlayStation 4.
They're going to say Orbis or something like that, didn't they?
Yeah,
I must admit that, like, I was one of those people. I was like, there it is, there's the name. And I think it's because, like, as journalists, whenever you talk to these people, you're always trying to sort of coax that out of them. You're always sort of trying to coax that one phrase out of them. So it's like it's like a little bit of magic when it actually does it.
It was a release. I'll admit, I was quite kind of ooh, it's the logo and everything. You kind of went, yay, it's here. It does have something to do with mobile games. In fact, we've got some information on it. If you want to know all about the PS4 and what it has to do with your iPhone and your iPad, keep listening. We've got some information about a couple of games coming both to the PS4 and to your iPad. Jonathan Blow's new game, got some information about that. And a few details about The Room, if you're interested in where it's going next, the next room, if you like. Then stay tuned and have a listen to the news. Okay, we'll kick things off with a quick roundup of some new updates that have come to a couple of iPhone and iPad games. First on the list being Pudding Monsters, which is Zep2 Labs' follow-up to Cut the Rope. You push little puddingy monster things around the screen. It's a grid square. They push them and they have to hit into things and not slide off the edge. It's a whole puzzle thingy. It's got a bunch of new levels, 25 to be precise. You could download that. It's a free update. And it'll give you a bunch of new levels to swish your monsters about on. Not quite sure what the theme is, but I just know that there's more of them, and more is better. That's a law somewhere, according to a scientist. I don't know. Also, Where's My Perry, the popular Disney game that itself was a follow-up to Where's My Water, has 40 brand new levels, clearly in an effort to one-up Zep2 Labs' efforts with the monster thing. What are the themes for this one? In the Dr. Doomfenshmirtz DLC pack, good name, you control Agent P's mortal enemy, Dr. Doomf... whatever, and you have to do... Oh, hang on, 20 new Agent P levels and 20 new of this arch enemy's levels, whatever. From what I can see from the screen, there's some lasers. So, you know, look forward to that.
Yeah, go for your life. If you like but lasers.
It's this one, unfortunately, you do have to pay for, though. So if you want to do it, the Doofenshmirtz DLC pack is available for 69p 99 cents, but it's 40 levels, so you know, that's fair enough. There's quite a lot going for it. And the other one that was interesting is Civilization Revolution, which was released like back in 2009, I think. It's been around for a while.
Not 2009, I think, is it?
I looked on the app shop. I think it actually is that old. First edition was. It's got multiplayer now. Only if you pay, though. They've been teasing a multiplayer element for ages. And it's finally appeared after, like, years. But it's only available if you buy the multiplayer content. So you've got three DLC packs, which you can buy either as like £1.99 or $2.99 each. Or you can buy them all three as a bundle for £2.49 and £3.99. And you get like new wonders, additional units, buildings, and there's one pack that gives you multiplayer content as well. So if you fancy gaming en masse, then you probably want to pick that up. If you're still playing this version of Civilization from years ago. But yeah, that's a good thing to look forward to.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, August 2009.
Yeah, I know. That caught me off guard as well. I thought there would have been an... Is there a new version of Civilization out? There must be a couple of different...
Is it Civ or Civ Rev?
It's Civ Revolution. So there's more modern versions, isn't there?
There's only one version of Civilization Revolution, but...
it's iPad version.
But like, there's not like Civilization Revolution 2 is what I'm trying to say. But
okay.
But Civ 5 came out last year or
something.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
But it's, you know, that's the one that sort of strips it all back, isn't it, Rev?
So. Sure. I mean, we gave it an okay review, but I really like it.
It's really good.
Well, you can get it on with other people then.
I'm going to.
Yeah, you do that.
What's interesting about those is, because I remember when people started doing kind of updates and there was this kind of like discussion about whether you gave them away for free or whether you didn't. And it's kind of interesting now that, I mean, I don't think necessarily the Civilization Revolution one will particularly work because it's a pretty old game.
Yeah.
And you bet probably, yeah, there's not that many people playing it, so they're not going to generate that much money. But the interesting one is Disney, because Disney has managed with its brands, because it's Disney, even when it kind of remade, when they did the Brave version of Temple Run, they charged that 99p. So they're obviously saying this is a Disney thing, there's going to be a mark of quality on it, and we're happy to charge people, even though, you know, clearly we're going to lose 80% of our audience.
Well, yeah. Although I think it's done a number of... I don't know about Where's My Perry, but I'm pretty sure there's been a number of free updates until now.
Oh, yeah. No.
Where's My Water?
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, 40 levels is a lot, so that's kind of fair enough, I guess, if you're really into it.
Yeah, but you said... But think, you know, the other thing is, like an Angry Birds, how many levels have they done? So it's... It's a different thing. We've not really seen big brands doing this before, so I think it'd be...
You think as a trend they're going to be charging?
Well, not everyone. I think there's not many... I mean, in the indies, just clearly can't. Even if you're giving away 50 levels, you just can't do it. It's only certain people who can do it, but it'd be interesting to see.
And I suppose you're going to be marketing to the people who are still playing it. Like, Perry's quite old now, isn't it? Mm. And if you're still playing it, you've still got it on your device, and you get that little notification. Yeah. If you're that interested, then they're the people that are going to spend the money on it, aren't they?
Because
they're desperate. Yeah, they're desperate for more content. So.
Yeah. And lasers, always.
And lasers, yeah.
Always room for more labels. Lasers. Yeah. Well, speaking of lasers and lights and general whizbangery, we, as we said before, were up late last night watching Sony not unveil the PS4.
You're being a little bit cynical. I mean, what do you mean not unveil?
No, I just mean the box. No, they gave us quite a lot. Everyone, there's been a lot of back and forth online about it, and it really has seemed to sort of divide. There's a huge amount of snark going on the one hand, and lots of other people going, well, what were you expecting? It was a sort of, it's a pre-E3 announcement, and so... if people were expecting to see the entire thing, as in show us the pad, show us the console, show us all the games, it would leave nothing for E3, and there's months to go yet. So they gave us a pretty good kind of heads up as to what we can expect from the PS4. So there were a few game trailers, there were some tech demos. We got to see the pad, which is looks better than I thought it originally did. Prototype was like, I didn't like the look of it. And this one...
I have to say, in terms of, they kind of mentioned mobile in the first 15 minutes and didn't really get into it at all. But,
yeah.
But having this kind of touch pad on the DualShock does seem to me fairly obscure, because it's, you know, obviously on the PS Vita they had the touch pad on the back, which was just literally not being used by anyone apart from the first couple of games. I mean, it just seems a little bit like that. Why exactly would you want?
I suppose. From a pure sort of gameplay perspective, yeah, it probably isn't that good, and ultimately, yeah, on the Vita it's naff generally. but for sort of scrolling around on a browser or the store or to sort of swipe through menus and stuff, I think actually that little swipe section could be quite useful.
But until you hold it, I mean, when you hold a dual stick, it kind of, you know, it kind of sits in your hands and your kind of thumbs just rest on the sticks, don't they? If you're going to be like, you're going to have to hold it in a different way, like one-handed, and it's, you know, it's just...
Looks like it might be an awkward reach.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, is it really that difficult to scroll through UI that you can't do it with two sticks? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
my feeling is they're going to use it for little mini games. You know, like if you have, when you come to like safes and locks, and they employ a little mini game in a thing that using the touchpad for things like that.
You don't need a mini. You don't need a touch. It just looks very small to do it on.
Hmm.
You know, I don't know. It seems a little bit.
But how will Nathan Drake polish all of the treasures that he gets in the next Uncharted?
Furiously buffing your PS4 controller.
I felt like it.
Yeah, like nice. Well, yeah, obviously, a lot of the announcement didn't apply to mobile, really. But in the beginning, they did slip in a little kind of nod to mobile, saying that the theme of the whole thing was kind of interconnectivity and the idea that instead of the console being the focus of the gaming experience, the player was the focus. And the player should be able to experience the game when they're at home on their TV or when they're on their move on the Vita or when they're on their phone and doing little browsy things where they're looking at companion apps to do with the games and stuff like that. So, I mean, we've seen companion apps coming out with games before. I mean, Mass Effect 3 had companion apps, and Halo Reach had companion apps, and it's become quite sort of normal or even expected for these kind of big games to have companion apps to go with them, where you can usually browse through extra content or check out friends lists or have little kind of wiki pages that, you know, information behind the scenes.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of wrote it up for the site, and then suddenly, I mean, it's interesting. I can obviously, the thing went on for like 2 hours, but the first 15 minutes, I mean, Andrew House, who's president of Sony Entertainment, Computer Entertainment, you know, the stuff he was saying there. I mean, whether it's, you never know exactly whether it's just kind of some words that the PR team have put together, kind of thing. But the stuff he was saying was really interesting. It was, you know, basically they were announcing to how many 2,000 people their new console, and they basically said it's not about consoles anymore. I mean, that's quite a radical thing to say.
Yeah,
which no one else really seems to picked up on, and I think it was followed through in the sense they didn't show a console at all. They basically didn't. They skated over the you know, the specs of the PlayStation.
Yeah. They said RAM. Moving on.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, and it was a bit like that. It was previously. Oh, you know, I've been to all the other launches of stuff, and they just go on and on and on forever about the Cell and the Emotion Engine, all that kind of stuff. So I think that was kind of an interesting change. And I just kind of wonder whether there's a lot more to come on that side of things. And they didn't really want to say that, because when you're announcing something for the first time, you want to show the big whiz-bangy shooter, bangy cars, shiny, because that's what that kind of audience wants. Mm. Even if you radically change your business model, which I think Sony will have to have done. And even like announcing, even the Geiger stuff, which was kind of presented in a very kind of secondary way. I mean, the whole we can stream anything over the cloud now was all very much like, oh yeah, you can share your videos and you can like spectating modes and all this kind of stuff. It wasn't, I think there's a lot more, or if there's not a lot more to come on that side of things, then they might be in a bit more trouble.
Did either of you two play much with OnLive?
A bit, yeah.
Yeah, I downloaded the app for my PC because I use my PC like running through my main TV. So I tested it out, and I did it for just before I went to Eurogamer in like 2011 or whenever it was. Yeah, I think then. And it was kind of the more impressive thing that I saw that day, as in, you know, the fact that I could just go in there like Spotify with music and just immediately start streaming games. That was really, really impressive. And you kind of go, oh, this is the future. It's not quite there yet, because until everyone has the fiber optic broadband and you can do it with no lag and all that sort of stuff. But it's clearly where it's going. So the fact that Sony then went in and bought up Gaikai and is obviously steering people towards it, or will be doing so through the PS4, is noteworthy and clearly sort of the direction it's all going.
And I kind of think you're right in the sense that, and actually Microsoft, it wasn't a Microsoft Xbox guy, but I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and there was basically the head of cloud at Microsoft was basically saying, you know, when you're looking at stuff like cloud, you just cannot ignore the fact that lots of places in the world, for whatever reason, have terrible broadband connection. You can't just assume you're going to have, you know, these kind of 4G connections everywhere or fiber or anything. So to go global on these things, you know, will take a lot longer than us kind of journalists would expect. But so maybe for the stuff like Geico, it will be a lot more about kind of cloud game saves and looking at video. Because the interesting thing with On Live was that, you know, if you had a bad quality, just the video quality just effectively you know, degraded. So it's actually quite a nice way of dealing with.
Yeah, you dropped frames and just basically went down to like 320 by 240.
And the fact that OnLive didn't work wasn't so much the technology, although there's some issues there. It was the fact that they were running their own data centers and stuff. I thought the one thing that did kind of concern me a little bit with the Sony thing was the talk about companion apps is ridiculous. I mean, companion apps are clearly, it's like saying you've got this great big cool game and then here's this like this kind of like rubbish thing that you
yeah.
Can,
it's don't look like, at the no, game, look at the tiny screen with
and,
it.
And that's kind of be interesting for those console guys because they know mobile's big because, you know, everyone can see it. You know, mobile gaming's massive and growing much faster. They can see that. But in their gut feeling is still, do they take it seriously? And if the only way they kind of interact with the mobile tablet world is to go, here's a companion app, then they really aren't getting it because people aren't playing, you know, a game like Kingdoms of Camelot, which was top grossing US iPhone game last year. Graphically a terrible game. I mean, genuinely, you can't even think what console that was running on. I mean, like a SNES or something. You know, the people are not playing that game because it's got brilliant graphics. They're playing it because it's always in their pockets, and that'll be the interesting thing. So not so much for the. I don't know if we're going to talk about Car Club because that was the one that they particularly mentioned. Drive Club, even, sorry. But I guess the more interesting ones is stuff like, I don't know what they've announced for Watch Dogs, but clearly, you kind of think there's going to be a strong mobile element.
Definitely. Well, given the nature of the game, it just fits perfectly, doesn't it? Yeah.
And similarly for Destiny, the Bungie thing.
That's right, Destiny, the new game from the Halo creators, Bungie, mm-hmm. they've knocked out one, and the idea is it's going to be able to share stories, they say. You're going to be able to engage in chat with other people, and obviously it's going to feed you events and news about what's happening in the game. So,
I think people are going to have to push on, you know, from that, and whether it's, I mean, I know it's people have tried stuff in the past, like having RTS games where you have like a commander mode that you're looking on your tablet or something, but there needs to be a way where people on a phone who are committed to a game that's basically running, getting the full experience or a certain experience on their tablet can be fully integrated into the gameplay on their phone as well. And that's not just buying and selling things through a store or kind of like looking at friends' videos. The people have to integrate this stuff properly for it to work. And technically it's difficult, and technically gameplay-wise it's difficult. Otherwise, what will happen is the people who are kind of running the mobile, it'll be the kabams and the supercells who are successful on mobile, will work their way up to console, because those guys can make console games. It costs money to make console games, but it's not technically difficult. So those guys will rise up from the bottom if the guys at the top can't meet kind of mobile and tablets halfway through.
Do you think that sort of moving forward, they were talking a lot about freemium and
they didn't talk a lot. They mentioned it once, I think.
Well, they
it's very significant. I agree. Yeah.
The fact that, you know, they mentioned it, and the fact that they have been making moves forward with stuff like on the Vita, there are, you know, treasures of Montezuma, there is, you know, sunflowers, you know, there's the Jetpack Joyride. Mm. Do you feel like potentially there are developers of freemium out there thinking we could get in here? And in addition, do we not feel that this Gaikai streaming service is a way to bring sort of higher quality visual experiences to Sony branded mobile devices, whether or not that's a Vita or a PS Mobile certified device?
I mean, the last point first. I mean, I think the issue for Sony is if they're going to do it, it can't just work on Sony phones. I mean, clearly that's ridiculous. I mean, Sony are what, I don't even know what where they rank in OEM phones. I mean, it's just, you know, they're right at the bottom. They may as well not exist, really. So if they're going to do it, they're going to have to go across all Android platforms, pretty much everywhere. I mean, the problem is if you get a game like Destiny or the new Killzone, you know, even if you can get this video stream of that on your iPad, you're not going to play it unless the DualShock works with it, which is probably unlikely. So, you know, I think that's kind of where the disconnect happens, where, you know, I don't think anyone disagrees, or I don't know any of us disagrees, that you can't be, if you've got a big TV and you've got a console in your living room and you've got nothing to do for the weekend, that there's nothing better than to rush out and buy the latest shooter and then, you know, spend whatever.
Do it proper, as it were. But you need to find the stuff that plays to the strength of the mobiles.
I don't think there's as much advantage by streaming kind of the Killzone to an iPad.
I streamed on live games to my S2 just to see what it was like, and it wasn't great because it's just not optimized.
No, it's just a different thing, and it's similarly, you know, people say, oh, well, people want to play Clash of Clans on their TV. I mean, you can kind of imagine it with a DualShock, but that's not really how that game's been designed. So this is why I kind of think you kind of. And it was interesting where, you know, Sony did say it's not about the consoles anymore, it's about the gamer, and it's about their experience where they play everywhere. But that means designers have to think outside how that experience can be created in lots of different ways, none of which is obviously secondary.
Yeah, the apps at the moment that support games tend to feel a bit more superficial, don't they? It's just little bits of information.
And that's pretty much why they've been absolute disastrous failures. Yeah. You know, cause it says it's a companion app. Oh, well, yeah.
You need more than a companion. It needs to be integral.
You know, it's 10 months, or maybe 9-10 months to go before Sony are going to release this thing. There's a lot more to come out. Obviously, there's E3 in May. Obviously, Microsoft are coming from this will be the strongest console release Microsoft have ever made. Mm. You could probably argue Microsoft are much stronger in terms of cloud systems, much stronger in terms of having their own mobile phone OS and their tablet. You know, so it's kind of Sony a bit more. Maybe had to go early, but not say as much as maybe they could say. I think it'd be interesting to see how Microsoft kind of positions themselves against.
The definite sense that things were being held back, and you know, it's to be expected. We've still got E3 to go, and then the console launch, they say, is going to be holiday, so sometime before Christmas we can expect to see it. There are a couple of other things that were teased that were of interest to us, though. Particularly, Jonathan Blow came up. He of Braid fame.
He's fun, isn't he?
Well, amid all the dudes coming out and going, check out our shooty games, bam, 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 bam. And he stood up there and basically went, you know, guns.
Rolled his eyes.
Yeah, he sort of did that. Oh, how can I possibly follow all these guns? Kind of remark, and then proceeded to show us The Witness, which is the game he's been working on for like 3.5 years now. Yes. His follow up to Braid, and it is a first person puzzler, which is set on an island, not a huge thing. It's an open world game in which you're supposed to wander around solving various little puzzles. Very sort of tranquil, let's say. It's colourful. Every area you go to, there are supposed to be several different puzzles of various different difficulties, and you can switch between them very quickly because the island isn't huge. It's not like trekking from one side of Vice City to the other. You can easily kind of jump between them, and you're running around solving these puzzles, and it's got the same kind of tone that Braid seem to have. Judging by the video that we've
Although,
shown.
Did you not think, I mean, there's obviously the whole Myst thing everyone was going on about, Myst 3.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, he says he's inspired by that. I saw an interview and he references it.
I mean, obviously, he's a kind of interesting chap, and his views on games are, you know, he's quite kind of iconic and iconoclastic in the way he approaches games. But there's all this kind of big build-up, you know, blah, blah. And then you look at it, and basically it's like, I mean, I know you see the Free Flow game. I mean, it's basically the puzzles are kind of like, seem to be, I mean, it's not very well contextualized, but kind of like joining up kind of like, roots.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. I was thinking that's got to be a representation of something that happens after you solve the puzzle. That can't just be the puzzle.
That can't be. And you kind of thought, oh, that would be like one type of the puzzle. Because I was kind of imagining, obviously we're going to talk about it maybe later. You know, The Room is obviously massively successful doing logic puzzles in a certain kind of what you might call console quality way.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting, blah, blah. So you kind of thought, oh, he's got this whole island full of like interesting, and then it's like, oh, yeah, we're just going to, like, trace a line. And maybe it's a fantastic kind of Sudoku expanding kind of thing that's going on there. But he just went, oh, here's this little puzzle that you kind of, like, draw around and it opens a door. And then, oh, here's another one. And it moves a bridge. And then suddenly it's, like, 2 minutes of, like, oh, you're drawing little lines on.
Well, it looked like those mini games, like when you played through like BioShock, when you had to unlock the doors and you had to do that pipe puzzle.
Yeah.
And for everyone, that's a mini game. That's not a whole game, but it could just be one part of it, and we're not
seeing
it.
Maybe he's just showing. Yeah.
The thing is, though, like you look at that work, like I didn't particularly like Braid. I thought it was overhyped, but like you look at his body of work, and it is basically just Braid. And
completely, yeah.
And you sort of think to yourself, well, if we're sort of giving him all of this sort of kudos and respect, and already people are sort of getting excited, and Sony already think that this is a thing that they need to throw money at to secure, and he's only sort of got one game behind him, it's a little bit...
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more because he's someone... I mean, Braid was this kind of a... Even though it used very generic kind of game mechanics... you know, twists on. The bigger twist was obviously the kind of meta story behind it. And obviously he's someone who could be interviewed by, you know, the New York Times or, the New Yorker even, and talk about games in an intellectual way that most game designers who may be as clever as him, you know, don't talk about things. So I think he's kind of a presence who does get wheeled out for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's a good front person for kind of the thinking man's game.
I completely agree. I mean, the problem with these guys often is they not get ideas above their station. I think he has a very clear idea of what he wants to do, and if Sony decide to give him a lot of money to do it, then why is he not going to kind of get involved? But yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm interested. I've one of my favourite games of all time is Portal, which is a first-person puzzle game set in a specific contained environment. So, the idea of The Witness doesn't, quite appeals to me. Whether it will completely be a washout. I mean, all these games that have been in development for so long, I mean, they had the same problem with Fez, where it was in development for like 5 years or something, and when it came out, everyone's like, yeah, it's good. Not earth-shattering, not 5 years earth-shattering.
But it's often the problem that the longer things are in development for and people, while you want to build up anticipation for a game, after about a year, then you obviously something's probably gone wrong.
Yeah, and chances are your stuff is out of date and your engine is out of date.
Exactly.
Colonial Marines. So you wind up with a game that suddenly looks 5 years old. For some reason. Obviously, if you're doing a retro game, that's fine because it suits it. But especially the other thing is that Braid was originally XBLA only, wasn't it? It was a Microsoft exclusive. So he's jumped ship to PlayStation. I wonder what the offer was.
But actually, the other rewinding that quarter of an hour to it, but Pete was asking questions and I forgot to answer one of them. But I think the most interesting thing that hasn't been answered and clearly is actually far more important than the console and digital distribution and free to play and stuff is how developers can release games. Is it are we going to get? Because I've kind of we've had, I don't know if you two guys weren't involved, but so I've kind of come up with this phrase unconsole, which everyone's laughing at me for coming up with the company, but the whole point of that is it's not so much, it's not that it's unconsole because the box doesn't matter anymore. I mean, the subtler thing is you're kind of breaking down these ecosystems that even with XBLA and PlayStation Network and these kind of things, basically Sony and Microsoft have controlled the games that have been released on their platform in a way. You could argue Apple's a kind of walled garden in the sense that there's a process, but it's nothing like the level that it's at. And clearly part of the success of Apple, I'd probably say the majority of it has been because anyone who pays $100 and can basically code or drag and drop, whatever tools it
can release,
a game or app, can just stick something out there. And that's where you get the likes of Doodle Jump and Pocket God and Temple Run and all these kind of things. Will Sony be opening up at that level? And that's kind of where they need to be, really. But equally, even on Microsoft, even with Microsoft on Windows Phone, because it's a system that's kind of it's just a bit more curated than iOS and Android. So I think those companies do have issues with what will be released there, I think that's the most important thing really for them is what stuff can be released and how.
There's always that danger that it will turn into a complete mess. I mean, people object to Google Play because of that, because there's the sheer volume of stuff because it is so open. It means that anyone can get on, and that turns into a mess.
People don't complain about it, do they? People don't. People don't go, oh, it's the people who complain about it.
I've heard people complain about it constantly. They constantly say that there's literally no good way of finding what is decent on Google Play, not just because of the volume of it, but because the search system is so knackered that you even type in the name of the game and it turns up on page 4.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just like anything. The whole point of the open system is not so much, because it's a different kind of method of discovery. It's basically your friend saying something, or you're just looking at the top 100. I mean, I don't think there's any. App Store is equally bad. I've typed in the exact name of games and it's not come up. For whatever reason. That's a wider issue. But I think that's almost like the biggest thing for Sony, because Sony have always, and Microsoft and Nintendo. And Nintendo are clearly the worst in this industry.
Yes.
But they basically have to relax the reins and let people, let 50% of people put out a bunch of crap, just because that 1% is going to put out something that everyone's going to go, oh, how did I even live without this one? That's more important, and that's why my unconsole thing. Anyway, that's another.
That's your unconsole. we'll check back in a year's time and see if it takes off. Yeah, so there's The Witness to look forward to. That will be coming to PS4 and to iPad. I don't know, what about iPhone? They've only mentioned iPad, I think. Mm-hmm. But it looks like kind of an iPad sort of game, so that would make sense. Another thing, a very important thing. You mentioned The Room earlier, that it's kind of, you know, a first-person puzzling game which uses gesture controls and intricate little puzzles. It did very well. It got Apple's iPad Game of the Year award, and it got took off in a big bad way, which was, from what I hear, thoroughly deserved. And I still haven't played it because my iPad still won't run it. But they have announced that it's getting an expansion pack sometime in the summer. So you're going to get a bunch more levels strapped on, and that will be free. So that's good news. And even more excitingly, it's getting a sequel. So, you know, given the success of the first, they have greenlit the follow-up. So we're going to have The Room 2, Another Room, or something. I don't know what they'll call it. But that's exciting news. I mean, it's weird me saying that, because I still haven't played the first one. So I've just seen it running and
no, it is. Well, I have to say, I didn't finish it. I don't think I'm very good at these games, really. Apparently, I didn't finish it. In the time I was playing, I played it over Christmas. But it's kind of intricate, but I found it slightly, you unlock one bit of these intricate boxes, and then basically you're given another box, and you go, oh, okay. I mean, there is like an overarching story that you're kind of following, which may give you some sort of a final satisfying conclusion, but I wasn't entirely sure.
Did you have a bash, Peter?
Yeah, I've given it a go. It's sort of a reverse Room Escape game, you know. It's kind of
where you lock things and close the doors.
In that you're trying to get into something, but sure, you're still unlocking everything. It looks it's lovely to look at, and it's and you, when you the most impressive thing is when you sort of like zoom in. You know, you're looking at these textures, and they're super high resolution. You zoom out, and it's all very smooth, and you know all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it's just a flick this, move these.
I kind of found it wasn't completely consistent in basically you kind of if you got stuck, you basically just went around tapping things.
Yeah,
maybe I'm a bit dim and didn't realize the pure logic that was guiding my hand. But basically, I was like, oh.
That is puzzle game backup though. When all else fails,
it was certainly enjoyable for
five hours.
Yeah. I mean, definitely worth the money if you're an action fan. Don't go for it. But
well, it sounds like my kind of game, which makes it even more annoying that I can't play at the moment. Hopefully, by the time the new one comes out, I'll have an iPad 12 or whatever they'll have, so I'll be able to play it briefly until it goes out of date again. What else have we got? Oh, before we move on to new releases, I will mention this quickly. Mikey Shorts, which was a sort of platforming retro game that came out, on the surface of it, it doesn't look particularly impressive. You boot it up, it just looks like a pretty bog-standard Mario-esque run-and-jump thing. But when you start playing it, the things you realise is, A, the controls are really, really tight, but we get through a few levels and think, this is kind of easy. There's no real challenge here. Until you realize the whole thing is based on time runs. And it's all about getting to the end of the level in the fastest time possible. And then you go, and it gets really interesting and exciting because you're trying to burn through without, you know, making a single error. And that's kind of where the fun is. It's a two-man team who did it, and they met up over a mutual love of I forget what the name of the game is, but it's a game with lots of hook shots in it. So they've decided that to complete their life quest, they must now add hook shots to Mikey Shorts. So now it's going to be called Mikey Hooks.
That's good.
Yeah. So we've seen a trailer. There's a trailer up on the website. Go look at it. It looks pretty much exactly like Mikey Shorts, only now he can jump and fire out a hook shot and swing over things as well. So it's pretty clear to see where that one's going. I sort of booted up Mikey Shorts again to give it a reminder. I was like, actually, yeah, this is kind of fun, and I can see where people get lost in chasing times because the controls are slick. There's that, you know, real sense that you are properly in command of what's going on. And these kind of games that where you're constantly chasing a high score are quite addictive, and I must best my mate. In the same way as the Pocket Gamer staff have been warring with 1-4-8 apps on Real Racing 3, I see. You've been trash talking, haven't you, Peter?
I think I've bitten off more than I can chew.
Yeah, you were laying the smackdown like a couple of days ago, and you've fallen silent.
That Jeff is Jeff.
Can
Scott.
He really race?
Yeah, he is a really really good racer, a real racer.
Damn.
I really want to talk about that game. I can't.
Do you know secrets?
No, I just don't really want to pass any judgment on it at the moment. Because it's kind of changing and doing other bits and pieces.
Changing all the time.
It is.
Yes. I mean it is all still racing.
Like, thank God. It doesn't turn into parachute jumping in mid-major
anymore. Exactly.
Comes out and you're racing horses. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. You're like, whoa, hello, come on.
Beta is one thing, but Jesus. Yeah.
We'll definitely talk about it more
next week.
Yeah,
that's when it's officially launching worldwide, so we can get the official reviews up and we can all have a good chin wag about that one. But that's next week. We have had a bunch of games come out this week for your playing pleasure, so we're gonna go and have a look at those over in the new releases. First up on this week's new releases, we have Gun Bros 2, which is what I'm calling it, and I'm sticking with it. It is a sequel to the top-down twin-stick shooter that actually did really rather well on iPad, from what I understand. It did, didn't it? Yeah, it didn't look great, and we thought it was kind of okay.
Oh, I don't know. I thought it looked pretty good. I mean, it came out like over a year ago. It came in December.
But it's by Glue, and it did really rather well. I forget, was the original one a freemium? Free to play.
Always been free to play.
Yeah. It's a Glue one, of course it is. The first one that took off did rather well. It stars two sort of roided up dudes who are supposed to be brothers, and it's, you know, top down twin stick shooty action. The sequel has just arrived. It's been floating around on the Canadian App Store for a little bit now, for like a month or two. And now it's finally gone global. It is also free to play, as the other ones are. You can indulge in a bit of multiplayer, from what I understand, which is kind of important. Did I make that up, or is that true?
No, they've had a multi. Well, for the original one, they released a multiplayer as a, I can't remember if it's an update or a standalone, but yeah, there's multiplayer in the first one.
Well, I know there's a multiplayer version that you can buy separately. Sorry, download separately on Android. I don't know what they did for iOS, but yeah, so it's a full-fledged online multiplayer affair. It's quite a different graphical style this time. The first one looked a little bit more kind of grungy and sort of real, whereas this is all pinks and purples and not quite Borderlands, but, you know, that brightly coloured cartoony aesthetic, more so than the other one. And I don't know if they've slowed it down. It looks to me like they walk slower.
Okay.
But I don't know, it might just be the videos. Either way, the first one did surprisingly well, and so obviously they're going to try and recapture the success of the other one. You can download it for free now. There are in-app purchases this time around, unsurprisingly, but there's a bunch of different outfits and all that kind of nonsense that you can buy and collect if you want to. But it's free to try, so you might as well give it a bash. Here's one that I wasn't aware of until now. Major Magna. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
Now, it's from the team who worked on the iOS version of Sonic 2, from what I hear. What it does, and it kind of shows when you see the game design, when you look at the levels, they do look kind of Sonic. There's also some similarities in the gameplay. Basically, you're this character who has a big magnet strapped to his back, and you fire him off, and there are these sort of circular magnetic sort of bolts scattered amongst the levels, and as you fling him up, he kind of gets caught in the magnetic field and spins round and round and round and round. So it's one of those games where you wait for him to get to the right place, and then you tap it and he flies off in a direction, hopefully hooks around another one, and you get around the level that way. So it's like those pinball bits in the Sonic games, only it's magnetized, and you know, that's how it works. It's very kind of colorful. It looks like a not 80s, like a 90s kind of, you know, platformer. Very much, in many ways, like a Sonic game.
It does look like a Sonic game, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really, really does. Which is nice. It's a good look. It's a smart-looking thing. Same thing with the music. It's got a kind of, I don't know, it looks kind of strong. I'm sort of up for it. It's 69p99, and we're going to have a review coming up very soon. I've heard good things.
Sorry, looking at the publisher, I think it's likely to go free quite soon.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Company you publish it, a company you do like free promotions. So I think they've launched it at 99 cents, and it will go. I imagine it'll go free by the time the podcast is out.
So okay.
Don't spend your money right now.
Fair enough. Go and have a look, but yeah, maybe wait a week or something. I will skip over this briefly because I'm going to talk about it later. Simogo, the guys who did Beat Sneak Bandit, finally released Year Walk. which is interesting. I'm going to talk about it more later because it's what I've been playing this week. You can get it for, it's £2.49, which I think is like $3.99, something like that. It's interesting, very interesting. Puzzle type game, first person perspective, bit weird. Stick around and I'll tell you more about it later. On the decidedly more violent and chaotic side of things, we've got The Gods : Rebellion, which is, for all intents and purposes, Gods of War on iOS. We've had one of our guys playing this, and he can confirm that that's pretty much what it is. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, again, because it, apparently it's actually quite good fun. I mean, Gameloft have done a version of Gods of War, and it was rubbish and chuggy and annoying. This one apparently does a lot better, and got some great massive set pieces and, you know, huge bosses that you're fighting with, and tons of gore, and a quite neat upgrade system. This is according to Harry, one of our main reviewers, but he's been quietly impressed.
This is interesting because it was originally, it's a Chinese developer, and it originally came out in China last year, I think maybe under a different name. And then Chinlingo snapped it up to publish it, and so I think there's probably been quite a bit of work to get it right for Western tastes.
Yes, they've probably God of War'd it right up to make it look.
But I think I remember the Chinese translation of it was actually literally was something like God of War. It was fairly blatant. So probably they may have God of War'd it down a bit,
dialed it back. Fair enough. Well, I mean, it looks the screenshots are sort of very pretty. Animations look very strong. How it controls, and have to wait and see. But yeah, feedback I've heard is sort of cautiously optimistic. Seems quite good version of it, and probably as close as you're going to get to it anytime soon. A God of War experience on your iPad. So that's out now. I think it's 69p, 99 cents. I think. I'm going to go with that. I reckon it is.
Yeah, it's called Infinity of God. It was.
Oh, was that the original one? Okay.
Uses Unreal 3.
Ooh, yes.
And was released in China at $40.
Seriously?
Seriously, yeah.
Good grief. I suppose they don't, yeah, they're not allowed PS3s and stuff over there, are they? Mm. Spend their money on their iPhone.
So you're getting it jolly cheap.
Yeah, it's a bargain, in fact.
It's a bargain, yeah.
Nice one. On the slightly more lo-fi side of things, we've got a little indie number called Worm Run, which was a Kickstarter project that got successfully funded and pushed through to development. It was quite a modest one, too. I think they're only asking for like $15,000 or something. Okay. Yeah, just a wee thing. It's an endless runner, in which you leg it, or rather jetpack it, away from this huge advancing worm thing. So it's a 2D style one, very, very retro. You're going through tunnels, sort of right-angled tunnels, avoiding lava pits and bits and bobs, whilst all the time trying to escape the gaping maw of this giant furry worm-looking...
It's not very furry, is it?
Oh, it's pretty furry in some of the screenshots.
Is it?
Yeah. But I think there are different skins for him. I think you get different ones. Imagine that big thing from Dune,
Worm, June.
Yeah, the big worm. Oh, and they're in Beetlejuice as well. Big sandworm-looking things chasing you. That was your interjection. Beetlejuice sandworm scared you?
Didn't like
it. So spiders and sandworms are your fears?
Just Beetlejuice in general, the movie.
Oh,
don't
really?
Bring that. Yeah, don't like it.
Oh, I like that.
Horrible, scary.
Bless him. Anyway, yeah, this is, again, from what I understand, actually quite good. I've had a sneak peek at Harry's review of this one, which hasn't actually gone up yet, but will be up by the time the podcast is out, and very good, apparently. The big difference here is that the controls are unique, rather than it being an endless runner where it's automatically running along, or being just a standard like floating joypad. You swipe the screen to control your dude, so you're basically kind of flinging him over the screen by whipping your finger across the screen, so sending him flying in whichever direction you want him to go, which apparently initially takes a bit of getting used to and can sometimes seem a bit chaotic. But A, it's a novel way of controlling it rather than just using the floating joypads. And B, it's very good at making you feel massively vulnerable, which adds this... Rather than the standard endless runner where you're just kind of going along to see how far you can go, it follows that Temple Run thing of, oh, you're being chased by something and it's nipping at your heels the whole time. And apparently this gets a good sense of kind of like exhilaration and it's going to get me kind of going on. 69p, 99 cents for that. Kickstarter goal was actually $3,200, so it really cost nothing.
Almost not worth kickstarting it, isn't it?
But I want to talk about Year War because it's cool. Mm. So, and you guys have been playing games as well. So let's have a look at what we've been playing.
What we've been playing!
Right. Peter Wellington, what have you been playing this week?
Well, last time I was on the podcast, you will remember that somebody suggested I play Royal Revolt.
Oh, yes.
They got in touch via email and they said, you should play Royal Revolt. It's really good. I really like it. Not enough people are playing it. And I was like, huh, what does this guy know secretly? I was like, huh, whatever. And so I downloaded it thinking, oh, I don't think this is going to be very good. And they sort of said, oh, it's a bit like a tower defense game. I was like, oh, I don't think this is going to be very good at all. Do you know, I was completely wrong. Royal Revolt is a brilliant reverse tower defense game in so much as you're sort of the invaders. You're a king or a prince, or I guess you must be a prince because you're sort of going and trying to sort of save your kingdom. And so you lead all sorts of hordes and archers and wizards and warriors along a path, a very narrow path, and try to destroy everything that blocks your way and all the bad guys, and then at the end destroy the castle. And I'd never heard of it. I'd never heard of Royal Revolt before. It's ace. Like it looks fantastic. Like it's got this really lovely pastel, kind of like a, you know, that sort of pastel Wreck-It Ralph coloring.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Disney does really well. It's kind of got that look to it. It's free to play, and the sort of upgrade path isn't so harsh that you feel like you need to. You know, you can just go back and grind out coins, and you will need those coins to upgrade your prince guy and your troops, and you can buy new spells and upgrade those spells. And the actual control is just really excellent. The sort of moment to moment combat, I was really enjoying it, and I kind of thought, oh well. You know, this is good, but it's very simple. And then when you get on to sort of harder stages, and that's about six stages into the 50 or so that are on offer, you realize that actually there's a fair amount of strategy in there, in so much as you're sort of playing the, I don't know what the term is in World of Warcraft, but it's the person who does all the buffing. What is that? Clearly big MMO fans.
Buffer? I did World of Warcraft for a week, and then I chastised myself afterwards for wasting my time.
Fair enough. But basically, you sort of play like the wizard character that would kind of hang back and a little bit and not really get involved in too much combat, but sort of buff up the stats of your troops, because that is actually the way that you move forward and how you get the fastest times. You're sort of given these times at the end for completing them quickly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really excellent, and well worth looking at.
Yeah, excellent, top stuff.
Yeah, no, I remember it came out. It came out last summer. It's really good. Yeah, because there are kind of interesting German startup where there's the guys from, where were they from? They were from one of the big German browser companies. I can't remember which one it was, and they started up to do mobile stuff, and they found it a bit difficult, and then they joined up with another quite well-known German developer called Keen Games, who'd done a lot of DS stuff, but very, you know, very professional. And together they came up with this really, 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 really nice game. I don't think it's done particularly well monetarily wise, but I think
I don't think it even got that much attention. Like you go and look at the leaderboards, and it's like it's minimal.
It's a shame because it is, as you say, it's like an action flip on tower defense. It's really done really nicely. Very, very accessible. I just don't think when you kind of do mobile, when you first start releasing mobile games, you just don't really understand where you put your marketing money and how to get cross promotion and blah, blah, blah. It's hard to start from nowhere. So,
Okay, good stuff. Well, I'll go next. I have been playing Year Walk, which regular listeners will know that I've been talking about for weeks now. It is the follow-up to Simogo's Beat Sneak Bandit, which is that rhythm action game that won a bunch of prizes last year. Year Walk is the creepy follow-up to it. It doesn't...
I was gonna say, it's nothing at all to do with it.
It shares nothing in common with it whatsoever. But rather than going for a kind of rhythmic game like they went before, they have gone for something which is much more in line with a point-and-click puzzler. But it's using a couple of sort of interesting techniques that separates them from the rest of the pack. It's presented from a first-person perspective. The visuals are this papercraft style, so it looks very, you know, like it's all been cut from crepe paper. And it's set in a wintertime environment, so you're out in these forests with these log cabins and other small kind of buildings scattered around the place. Very, very eerie atmosphere, lots of kind of twinkly, creepy music, and a very sort of minimal plot line. When you originally start up, when you start off the game, you're just presented with the screen. There are no controls suggested to you. You don't get a tutorial. You just sort of look at the screen, so you just immediately start fiddling about with it. So you swipe, and you realize you can sort of pan left and right in a parallax scrolly kind of way. So you can just like kind of swoop, and you get these nice crunchy footstep effects as you go, so it's clear you're walking. And you sort of just sweep left and right, and you can go a certain distance, and then occasionally an up arrow will appear on the screen, usually in line with a path that appears in the background. And then if you sort of swipe down, you will step forward onto the next plane. So it's as if you're kind of, you know how parallax scrolling used to work back in the day, where you've got like basically sort of 16 different or something 2D images that all, you know, scroll across the screen at various rates to give the illusion of depth. It's like you're stepping from layer to layer. So you're kind of walking into the background, and then you're on that plane and you can sweep left and right, and then you can step back again at certain intervals. Along the way, you encounter, like I say, little outhouses or buildings, and in them they'll have strange objects or puzzles or clues. Same thing, you'll find weird sort of iconography scrawled onto the side of trees. And all of these are clues to allow you to unlock puzzles that appear later. All the puzzles are different. Some of them are quite obscure in that strange, you know, bizarre puzzle game logic way that most of these things have. I'm not going to speak too much about the puzzles, because to do so would be to spoil it. What I'm most impressed with about the whole thing is the atmosphere is excellent. It's really well pitched in terms of creepiness factor. There's actually managed to prompt a couple of little starts from me. I'm a horror game guy. I like this sort of thing. So headphones on, dark room, whack it on. And I've got a couple of little ooh jumps out of it, just because there have been a couple of instances where really weird things have happened. And there are some quite, I suppose, oddly grotesque imagery. Even though it's done in this cardboard style, it's very surreal. And a couple of the puzzles which have involved, infants, and infants are always creepy, especially when there's, you know, blood involved. And when you start going into that territory, you're like, ooh, weird. Which is what I approve of wholeheartedly. I love that stuff. I think it's great.
I mean, is it a horror game, or is it like a story game with eerie elements?
I wouldn't call it a horror game.
Would you recommend it for small children?
No.
Obviously not.
No, I wouldn't. Because it's a bit too surreal, and it's a bit too obscure as well. I think the lack of direction will weird people out, because you really do have to just fumble your way around, and there's no clear path or order in which things should be done. And some of it's quite obscure. You have to... What's the stuff they tested you on when you were a kid? Non-verbal reasoning. Yeah, that. Lots of non-verbal reasoning.
They didn't test me.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you go to run those special schools?
Yeah. Did you
with
grow
bars
up on
the windows? Yeah.
Did you grow up on like a secret research facility?
No. I had to do an exam to get into a school when I was a kid, and one of the things they always used to test you on was verbal reasoning and non-verbal reasoning. So you see patterns, and they get presented with four different patterns, and you have to guess which will be the next iteration of the sequence.
Okay.
So it's kind of like that, as in there's lots of... I mean, I'm sitting in front of a pad scrawled with images and little notes and stuff, because it's one of those games where you have to copy down information and make notes of what's going on so you can work it out later. And there have been a couple of really neat, obscure little puzzles where the idea occurs to you of, like, maybe I'll try this, and you do it and it works. You're like, oh, nice, yes. It gives you that kind of feeling of false intelligence, like you've done something clever, which is the best thing about those kind of puzzle games. I wouldn't recommend it for young kids, because it is a bit weird and creepy. But if you're into the kind of horror games, it's my kind of horror game, as in it's not Dead Space 3, which is I've been playing as well, and this is more creepy than Dead Space 3.
Hmm.
Oh. Because Dead Space 3 is basically just things running at you going, which after the first 20 minutes, you're completely desensitized to it, and it's not scary. It was never a particularly scary series in the first place, but now it's just gone full-on Gears of War bombastic nonsense, and I'm in short supply of good horror games. Horror games clearly don't sell that well. It's a niche audience, so you don't get very many good ones. So when one gets successful, they immediately start making it more like an action game, which is really irritating. This is not action at all. It's all puzzles and quirkiness. We've given it a silver award mark, said it was, he enjoyed it like I did, said it can be a bit easy in places, which I might agree with. But it's not that long. I haven't got to the end yet, but from what I understand, it's not the longest game. But production value is so high, and it's clearly they've thought about it, and they've got an ethos to the whole thing. They haven't just knocked it off and gone, oh, it's a random endless runner. This game has a theory, and to the point where there's an entire separate app you can download for free, which basically works as kind of a glossary to explain the symbols. Basically, gives you like a kind of an almanac that describes what all the symbols mean. I haven't downloaded that yet because I always didn't want to look in case it spoiled anything, you know. But that's available as well. So there's clearly a deep lore involved in the game. And that comes through just through playing it. So it's got lots of nice surprises, lovely little moments. Slightly more expensive at $249, but the quality, I think, is well worth the purchase. So if you like that sort of thing, definitely check that one out. Which leaves John. What have you been playing this week, John?
I've seen you doing a lot of Chinese, looking at a lot of Chinese games at the moment.
You have. You're our Eastern correspondent here. Yeah.
I've never been there, so I'm quite annoyed. But there's as we refer to the game, the game that's out on Chinlingo, there's a company called WeStone who have bought out. Again, it's unreal. I think the Chinese, it's interesting. They seem to like Unreal a lot at the moment. In the West, you would kind of suggest that last year was the year of where Unity kind of took over for mobile games. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it, very high end games now using Unity, whereas the Chinese still seem to be using Unreal. But there's a game called Wanderer Warsong, which is an Unreal game. Looks really good. It's kind of basically like a boss arena game. So you're moving between kind of fixed battle arenas.
I've heard of this one. Yeah,
these massive bosses. I mean, it looks really good. Control wise, I felt it could have done with a bit more kind of.
That's what I.
Yeah, and it's the other kind of issue. I think the other thing is if it was free and if it was a free to play model, that'd be kind of fine because you'd kind of feel. I can't remember how much it costs. I mean, I got a code for it, so I didn't actually buy it. But I think I think it may be. Let's have a quick look. Actually, I think it is. Five of your American dollars, yeah. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend it from that point of view, but I think it's kind of generally, I think it's interesting that well, we've always assumed the Chinese market is very free to play, and it is. There are some people who are kind of taking what we consider a more premium view. Interesting.
You sort of need to have the quality gameplay to back it up, I suppose.
Oh, and one more. I've been playing. Did I mention this last week? I can't remember. Dragon Up. Did I mention Dragon Up?
I think
Didn't I? Well, I'm still playing Dragon Up. I love Dragon Up. It's not. I mean, gameplay wise, it's a bit bonkers. So it's basically like a kind of like a dragon rearing, like a dragon RPG. Really.
Oh yeah, that's
very
right.
Light RPG elements. But basically, the thing I love about it is the dragons are hilarious. They're absolutely hilarious. They're like Gerald Scarf dragons, little cartoony things, and they kind of like when they kind of like want to go to sleep, they look at you and they like really sleepy eyes, and they look at you like, and you're like, oh, he wants to go to sleep. And I'm not really someone who goes for these nurturing games, but Dragon Up I'm finding hilarious.
Peter, this is clearly right down your alley. You had that love affair with the horse game, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So rearing dragons. Love...
I thought we were not allowed to mention that.
I've been playing a dragon rearing game on Facebook recently.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah, and I can't. Do you know it was so impressive?
Oh, it was.
It was so impressive that I have completely forgotten its name.
Dragons are really making a comeback at the moment. I've noticed because you've also got the Hobbit that's leading up to a great big dragon reveal.
Oh,
PS4. Great big dragons, the best bits of dragons.
Yep, Layer 2 getting announced.
yeah, exactly, Layer 2. My gosh. Yeah, dragons all over the shop. So, and you've been rearing little cute ones, which would probably get munched by Smaug, I imagine. Yes. So, keep them safe. All right, then that probably wraps it up for this week's podcast. As always, go and check out the site. The games we've mentioned today are part of the Game of the Week award. So go and vote for your Game of the Week, and you'll get the results on Monday. Some good ones this week, too. Go and check us out on Facebook, at Pocket Gamer, and obviously Twitter, at Pocket Gamer as well. Thanks for joining us this week. I will catch you sometime in the future, next Thursday more than likely. Keep your eye on the Twitter as well. We'll throw out some questions next week. But until then, take it easy.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.